Welcome, Adam Unsworth. You are a classical French horn player. You are a jazz player. You're a member of the Philadelphia Orchestra horn section. And that only covers about a third of all of your talents. Welcome to Crossover once again.
Thank you very much.
And that was Adam improvising on the Mozart E-flat horn concerto. Is that right?
Doing my best, as irreverent as it may be.
Now, there's so much to talk to you about. You are a man of many, many talents. We'll probably start with your musical talents as well. Obviously, you had classical training. Where did you study?
Well, I grew up in Potsdam, New York, and studied with the local horn professor at Potsdam State University. And when I went to college, I went out to Northwestern University. The Chicago Symphony has always had a fantastic horn section.
Yes.
That was very appealing to me as a French horn player. So I studied there and then went to UW-Madison for my graduate work. And that's when I really got into jazz on the French horn.
Now, did you want to teach at any point?
Sure. I mean, I really enjoy teaching and love teaching, mostly in the classical vein at this point. But that's something that I've always enjoyed doing. Yes.
And you are a teacher here at Temple University.
Yes, I do teach. Yes. I have six wonderful students at Temple University, and I also teach a brass orchestral repertoire class.
Do you teach any jazz?
Not at this point, no.
Okay, we're going to have to get to jazz very, very soon, because you grew up, you said, with jazz. Your parents loved jazz. You heard a lot of jazz at home.
That's definitely my advantage. As a person playing a typically classical instrument, I grew up with jazz all around me. My older brother is a jazz bass player, and my father plays jazz piano and some jazz trumpet. And so jazz was always going on in the household.
And so what did you do, just pick up the horn one day and start jamming? Or?
No, the horn came later. I also ended up playing jazz bass, jazz electric bass, in big bands starting in junior high school. And when I got to Northwestern, I figured, you know, probably my time was up on the bass, but it wasn't the case. I was one of the only people interested in playing jazz bass at school.
Really?
Even for a great music school like Northwestern. So I played jazz bass in big bands and jazz combos all the way through my graduate degree, or my undergraduate degree. And I didn't really start applying it to the horn until I got to grad school and just decided this would be something really fun to do and something different.
Now, were you playing contemporary jazz, or were you playing straight ahead jazz?
It was straight ahead. It was standards, which was fantastic for me because I learned a lot of tunes. I got to hear bass lines and construct bass lines and really kind of see how jazz was formed. And so all that really helps me with the horn now.
Well, I would imagine also playing a single line instrument, you know, a melodic line instrument, or, you know, just one staff, is very, very limiting in a sense for musicians that study that way. I think if you've studied the bass and then you've studied the horn, of course you know what the bass line is.
Sure.
People that play the piano have a sense of structure, you know, something with two clefs. But so actually, though, the real truth of the matter is that you really, really want to do a lot of very exploratory things with the instrument. Isn't that right?
Yeah, this is definitely the case. I enjoy creating new sound, exploring the instrument's possibilities, and that's something that I've really tried to show on my new CD. And I'm constantly doing this exploration, and the horn, we have our right hand in the bell. You can vary the sound there. You can do all sorts of different things with the valves. You have different mutes you can put in the instrument.
I thought you had your hands full just playing straight.
the potential of the instrument has not really been tapped.
We've just heard Third Time's the Charm, an original piece by Adam Unsworth, performed with his group on his new album, Excerpt This, featuring Adam on horn, Diane Monroe violin, Les Thimig bass, clarinet, flute, and alto flute, Tony Maselli on vibes, Renan Meyer bass, and Cornell Rochester on drums. Well, you know, it's funny. Every instrument is difficult if you really want to play
sure.
it right. But for me, I always have felt the French horn was kind of iffy. Maybe they'll make it this time.
Right. Well, it has that reputation. It's easy to miss notes on the French horn. You know, French
what is the reason for that?
It's a small mouthpiece. Mm-hmm. It's a very small bore, meaning the diameter of the tubing is not very wide. And main, it's getting into really technical parts, but the harmonics themselves on the instrument are close together, and so it's easy to overshoot or undershoot that harmonic and embarrass yourself.
Well, it happens very, very often, even in some of the best orchestras.
French horns in the best orchestras in the world are known for missing
fluffing,
notes.
It happens, and then people really don't understand. And it's one of the most beautiful sounds, I think. It sounds well, the trombone has a similar sound, or a euphonium, something in that area.
Sure. The horn, in my mind, has a little bit more of the soaring capabilities. You know, those instruments have the velvety tone, but the horn can really soar.
Oh, it sure does. Yeah. And Strauss, I mean, there's nothing more heroic than a whole horn section playing high notes.
Sure.
And, of course, they use it in movie music all the time.
Absolutely. It's very
John
effective.
Williams outdoes himself with the horn parts. Those studio musicians must blow their chops, as we say.
The all John Williams concert, you know, in the summertime is about the heaviest horn concert that we get.
Really? I'll bet. Well, he loves them high, too, I think.
Right.
So, there you are. You're playing with the Philadelphia Orchestra, and you intend to be there for as long as they'll have you, I guess. And you are also, we haven't even touched on your other talents, you're a runner, aren't you?
I guess I can say I get out. I have three little kids right now, so I'm not as intense on the pavement as I used to be. But yeah, I ran a number of marathons. I think about 15 marathons in my past. It almost feels like a past life, you know, before kids were born. But I was, you know, very intense about it. I guess it's part of my personality to go at things full bore. So
and. Fixer upper as well.
Yeah, I've got an old 1865 house that I love to.
1865, how wonderful!
Yeah, I love to work on it.
But this is a serious effort now that you've come out with this album, which is called Excerpt This, and you're playing with some very fine musicians on the album. Diane Monroe, who we've spoken to many times, a wonderful violinist.
Yeah, fantastic.
Tony Maselli, Renan Meyer, bassist. I mean, you have Les Timmick, is it?
Timmick. Yeah.
And Cornell Rochester on drums. And all of this is original material, isn't it?
I think six of the eight tunes are my own original material, and the two other unaccompanied French horn tunes were written for me to play. I kind of went at this album. It's something that I've been thinking about and tossing around for about 10 years in my mind, and I really wanted to do. And it was something that I wanted to make a statement with, and also have it be very different from what's been done with jazz horn or anything jazz. And
has there been much done with jazz horn?
Yeah, there are a few, I wouldn't say much done, but there are a couple of very talented individuals who have made some albums. Tom Varner in New York and John Clark have done well for themselves with jazz French horn. One of the things that I really was conscious about is I didn't want to just stick myself in a jazz quintet with a tenor saxophone, piano, bass, and drums. I wanted a new texture, something to make this whole experience of listening to my album different.
Strings and vibraphone.
I picked instruments that you would typically call classical instruments. The violin, the French horn, bass clarinet. The bass clarinetist also plays alto flute, and vibraphone, bass, and drums, you know, for the rhythm section. Mm-hmm. But this creates a whole new texture that I don't believe has been done before. And all of those instruments are very nice blending instruments with each other. And vibraphone blends great with everything. French horn tends to blend really well with woodwinds and other brass and everything. So it's the sound is a unique one, and I find it quite appealing.
It's very different, yeah. So you're really breaking new ground with this.
I'm trying to. I'm hoping to, you know, raise the bar a little bit for French horn and also just show the potential of the instrument, what it is capable of doing.
Do many people play jazz? I mean, other than the greats that you've mentioned, are they interested in it? I mean, do they think of it in terms of a jazz instrument?
Not very often. It's really a different way of playing the instrument, especially of articulating the instrument and of blowing air into the instrument.
So the technique is different.
So, yeah, when I was first trying to transfer my knowledge of jazz to the horn, I really had to work on that kind of thing. Lots of listening and playing around with different kinds of articulation and uses of my air. And most French horn players who have had a strictly classical bass, they go at the French horn in a very sort of straight ahead way. And I almost think about the way I go about it when I play jazz is almost backwards in the way I articulate.
So you have to really screw your head on in a different direction.
Yeah, for me, it's
another persona.
It feels like a complete release for me. It's the most comfortable thing in the world.
Really?
Too. Yeah, just you let it go. I miss as many notes as I want. I can be as creative as I want. I'm not tied in.
Well, that would be relaxing, I
think.
Yeah,
I'm not tied into a classical tradition. I mean, I love classical music, but at the Philadelphia Orchestra, you are trying to reproduce these great works, and there's a lot of reverence that goes along with these works, and there's a tradition, a great tradition of, you know, 100 years, a couple of hundred years that go with these works as well.
What happens to your classical technique?
I find that the jazz has only helped me be more expressive classically. I really feel like it's opened a lot of those kinds of doors. If I go to play a passage of classical music with my jazz mindset, it's much more comfortable for me. And I would actually attribute it to how I've gotten a job in classical music.
Now, you played with the Detroit Symphony mm-hmm. for several years. What is your symphonic background? So you had studied, and then you...
Studied. I played briefly in the New World Symphony down in Miami, Florida. And soon after that, I was in Detroit Symphony, a second horn. I was there for 3 years. And then Philadelphia, this is now my eighth year.
So you just jumped right into the mainstream here. I mean,
I definitely call myself lucky in that way. I didn't have a whole lot of suffering.
Well, of course, it's luck, and then there's, of course, talent. And but I think with other instruments as well, you know, you have to kind of put your head in a different frame of reference. I mean, somehow, mm-hmm. I think the whole attitude of jazz, it's very important, it's very complex, and it's very structured. However, in order to play it, you have to relax, because you do improvise, and improvisation is so much extemporaneous. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so very, very different from classical.
Right. There's definitely a structure to it. The spontaneity is really what is appealing to me.
Well, you're doing really, really sophisticated improvisation.
Yeah, it's a different mindset, but it's one that I actually find the most comfortable for me. And it's just from my background and my makeup and how I approach the instrument. The classical is something that I really have to buckle down and practice and work on. And the jazz, I certainly have to work on it, but there's the sense of freedom also is so great for me that it seems like the easiest thing that I do on
now,
the instrument.
The Esther Boyer College of Music actually sponsored, or they had given you a grant for one of the works on this album.
There's a wonderful composer who works at Ithaca College, Dana Wilson. I've mm-hmm. always admired his music, and he's a jazz pianist, his background, but a classical composer, and has written a lot for the French horn. So I commissioned him to write me a solo horn piece with some improv in it. And
did he write the improv out? Or?
He wrote the head, the actual melody, and the chord changes. Mm-hmm. And that's stated at the beginning, and then I improvise on that. That's just the middle movement. They're actually, the first movement is a ballad, a very soulful jazz ballad, and the last movement is a samba. And this is all just produced by an instrument alone.
This is Graham's
Crackers.
Crackers.
The title is, he finished it the day my third son was born, who was named Graham.
Ah, I see.
And so he dedicated it to him.
We just heard Graham's Crackers, a piece by Dana Wilson, written for Adam Unsworth, jazz and classical French hornist, our guest today here on Crossover. The composer dedicated the piece to Adam's son, Graham.
How old are your children?
4, 2, and 8 months right
now. Nobody's carrying an instrument yet.
Not yet, but they will be soon. They're all very interested in music.
Really, are they musical? Well, you can tell.
Yeah,
at four, maybe.
I'm biased, but yes, of course, I can tell they're musical.
So you fix up an old, what is it, a farmhouse?
An old manor house up in Wincote. It's
how wonderful.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah. In your spare time, huh?
Yeah, the spare time is few and far between these days.
Now you're going to be giving a concert, two concerts.
Yes, we're going to open, have a sort of a CD release event weekend, we're going to call it, Philadelphia Museum of Art on March 17th.
Wonderful venue to play in.
Yeah, in the Great Stair Hall. And there are two sets, 5:45, and then I believe the second set starts at 7:15. And then 2 days later, March 19th, at Rock Hall at Temple University, is I give a recital every year, and it's typically a classical recital. This year I decided to do something different. And
you're going to raise some eyebrows with that?
No, they've been very supportive. Bring my group in and play, just, instead of a recital, play a jazz concert on stage there.
You're going to do any standards?
We'll probably throw in a couple. I think that I feel like just... that is part of being a jazzer, is throwing in a couple of standards there. I want to focus on my own material mostly, and you know, the album is my own compositions, and that's where I want to stay mostly, but we'll throw a couple of standards in there.
So will the album be available at both concerts?
Yes, available at both concerts, as well as my website, and it's actually available on my website right now for order,
which is
www.adamunsworth.com.
Adam Unsworth, all one word.
All one word, yes.
UNSWORTH.
Correct.
And will it be in stores at any point?
I hope so. We're still working on that kind of thing. At this point, I just decided to go ahead and make it, and we'll work on the distribution and that kind of thing.
What do you think of the future of contemporary jazz is? I mean, is the public really becoming more tolerant, or is it still just an elitist kind of thing?
It's an interesting question. I'm not sure I have a great answer for you, but I do think that there's always an interest, what I perceive as always an interest in something new and something different. Just like in the classical realm, when people love to go and see a 9-year-old soloist, mm-hmm. you know, just something that wows them is impossible or seemingly impossible. Mm-hmm. Doing something different, like this on the French horn or, you know, jazz harp or something like that, is, I think there's an attraction to that and an appeal, and that's kind of what I'm hoping to tap into.
Well, part of it is it's so difficult.
Yeah.
You know, it is really difficult on certain instruments. But, I mean, for you, it's not just the novelty of doing it. This is your expression, isn't it, essentially, from your soul?
It really is. And it's something that, as wonderful as the orchestra is, I don't feel like I'm really able to let out in that setting. And so this is something that feels like it's just a necessary act for me.
So it's more of a solo kind of expression without needing all of the support behind mm-hmm. it. Being a cog in a wheel,
right.
as it were, even though it's an important cog.
Sure, exactly.
Can you just play something again? We're playing excerpts from your album, but can you, here in the studio once again, do something for us, perhaps
sure.
in a more lyrical?
Okay. Yeah, I'll play a tune that's on the album called Halfway There. And the title comes from the technique that I'm using in the song, which is a half-valve technique, not depressing the valves all the way, which gives kind of a ghostly, eerie sound of the French horn.
You're teaching, you're here, but you're considered a classical teacher, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in the jazz department, no. I mean, this is sort of a new venture for me that I've been playing jazz for a long time, but to focus on it and try to make
to
a
make
name for myself
yes.
or make something of it is really over the last year. So this is sort of the result of the past year.
Good.
So I'm just starting out in a lot
good
of ways.
Good luck. It's really...
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you certainly have a stable base.
Right.
But it is a real... not the dichotomy, is that the word? I mean, you really are like a very classical, especially in orchestral playing, so structured.
Yeah, and that's what it is. But I really feel the absolute need to break out.
Well, you're a person that's multifaceted, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you have many interests. It's not that you just, I mean, aside from being a musician, you run. And then, of course, you also have this fixing up kind of thing,
right.
this restoration of old homes, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
And it's a creative outlet, and you are very creative. So.
Yeah, it's something that just feels like it's part of me that has to happen.
Good.
So
That's when you have to follow the dream.
Yeah.
How did you arrive at the title excerpt this? Because I know you learn orchestral excerpts
right.
when you're in a...
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking about, is that just to sort of signify my departure with this project from my background and my classical music that I do so much with the Philadelphia Orchestra. Horn players spend a lot of their life trying to perfect these orchestral excerpts, important passages of orchestral music. And this is how you get a job, is you walk on stage at this audition and you play how many ever orchestral excerpts as perfectly as you can. And so it's a little bit of a statement, you know, maybe not against that, but just say, you know, this is something different that this instrument can do, maybe, and maybe a challenge to other horn players. Try to do this too.
I love what you're saying, but that is only a segment of what you really are as an artist. I mean, there is so much repertoire where you have to be a complete artist. And now, I say this, and I'm sure I may be challenging some people, they are grinding out musicians who learn the excerpts, but they don't learn really very much else. The only other chance they have to do that is perhaps in chamber music. And even then, as a soloist, I mean, a lot of these instruments are not solo instruments, but yet they don't learn repertoire. They learn the excerpts. They get a job in an orchestra, and that's it. And I think that's a wonderful point that you're touching
on. I hardly agree with you about that. It's the orchestral world has a dilemma on how to hire the best musicians, and the way they have ended up doing this to be the most fair is just to have everyone play the same passages on a stage by themselves, but it really does not have much to do with the actual job.
Or
I'm never on stage by myself.
Yes, or being a musician.
Yeah, and it's I personally am not crazy about the whole procedure, but that's what we have in this country. You know, in Europe, it's more geared towards playing concertos, playing solos, showing your musicianship. The audition procedure itself, and I do prefer that type of approach because you can really see the musician in that rather than just see someone who can regurgitate excerpts.
We've just heard All I Need, written by Adam Unsworth, French hornist, who is our guest today here on Crossover, performing with Les Timig, Tony Maselli, Renan Meyer, Cornell Rochester, and Diane Monroe on this latest album, Excerpt This.
At any rate, this CD for me is, and that title, you know, it's tongue-in-cheek, it's got some attitude, it's a number of things. You can take it a number of different ways.
Well, you can't learn it.
Unless
you listen to
it.
Yeah, right. So that's great. Great title.
Thank you.
Good. Well, of course, it shows, again, your open-mindedness. It's not a narrow focus that you have. You are thinking about the whole picture, the whole scope, and the whole role of the musician, and that's really what we need in the music business.
Well, thank you.
Good. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you, Jill.
Thank you for coming here, and the best of luck.
Thank you.